I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind, and the business got me stressed. In the Red Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, y'all?
2017.
Anyway, Chris is here, so I ain't gonna worry about it.
I was listening.
So y'all know how we do it on a Rant Room. On this show, we keep it. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. See, you hear her voice, Little Miss Interruption herself. Lisa Bolakaja.
Because I had to have a little moment for Christmas.
Why do you always have a moment because, right when I say
because
that?
Because when you're about to say something, then something pops into my head, and I'm like, shit. And I start thinking, and then I get distracted. You know how I am. And anywho, so no, I was thinking about Chris Cornell from Soundgarden, Audioslave, yeah. And I'm like,
he died.
He committed suicide.
He committed suicide, and so
I didn't know that
they were in concert. Who does that while you're in concert? I can see if you had worked in 5 years.
So for those of us who grew up with grunge, that whole the whole shift in music when you around that changes, like for all those old heads when hip hop came through, y'all remember what that was like, and how when new music comes through, and it was like, you know. That was my boy. He was good looking, had a great vocal range. I think it was like 4 octaves.
He did.
He killed himself.
Yeah. And yeah, so, you know, condolences to his family and all those folks who are fans. And hey.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, what's up? Lisa Bolakaja. Mm. What's up, girl?
Hey, shout
you
out.
You off for the summer now?
Hey, yeah. Freedom.
Freedom.
Us free. Give us free. Yes. So, shout out, because last night was the Nebula Awards.
Okay. It's probably going to air in another week, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Okay, 2 weeks ago. If I can project a future. So shout out to Amel, who won for Best Short Story. Shout out to Charlie Jane Andrews, who won for Best Novel. And shout out to my boy, Sentis Bender himself, Sam Joshua Miller, my brother from another mother, my roomie... who helped clue me at Clarion.
He
was nominated. Also, all the other friends. Bo, hey, shout out to Bo, Alyssa.
She's going to be nominated next year.
All the homies, Nora, all the homies that got nominated. Because look, for the last 3 years, the homies have been like on the list. So I don't even like vote to like choose anybody. Because it's like, when all your friends are on the list, it's like, who are you going to pick? You know, and usually I try to be fair, but all those stories were fucking wonderful this year. So congrats to everybody who were nominated. Charlie Jane, your speech was awesome. And shout out to that wonderful astronaut who was the Toastmaster who gave those wonderful slide presentations. And I learned something. Well, no. I did not know astronauts.
You learned some shit?
You know, as brilliant as I think I am, I didn't realize in outer space they can't eat bread because of the breadcrumbs. Like, theoretically, I knew they can't eat bread.
What's wrong with the breadcrumbs?
Because the breadcrumbs will get everywhere. They'll
so when they
around.
Eat hamburgers and stuff, they use tortillas.
Oh,
to
okay.
make their hammer, and they have movie nights in the International Space Station, but they have to tie themselves to shit because they'd be floating. And he said that even though you would think floating would be comfortable, he says it is not.
I believe that.
And so he showed a picture of them tying themselves down. So they're watching movies, they're floating in space, and the shit's all tied up.
And they keep floating.
And they keep floating this way. So I was like, I was really impressed. So shout out, and hey, that's what I got to say.
Interesting.
And I'll see everybody next weekend, even though it's 2 weeks in the future. I'll see y'all next weekend. Amel, bring that award, girl, so I can check out your new Nebula Award. So, and I'll see the rest of the fam this weekend.
No, what's up?
Okay.
And we got my boy on here, Chris Derrick from the Derrick Brothers writing directing team. What's up, Chris?
What's up, people?
It's been a minute, hasn't it? It feels like it's been a while since you've been on the show.
March was a
month. Was that long ago? Well, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chris was just telling me as I eat. Like, you be smacking it, and
I don't smack. I nibble.
Chris was telling me he's you're working on a new short story, right?
It's done.
It's been a year in the making.
Well, I still got to read that one scene you got, because now that I'm free, I can read freely.
Well,
and not have pressure.
I was telling you about this maybe in February. I had this like psychological horror that I was working on, so that's finally done. I'm gonna send it to you.
Is it? It just still needs to be rewritten.
No, I was in a rewrites all week.
Okay. Then we'll talk offline. You can send it over to me, what you call it, and I'll see if I can bump it up to my editor if it's good enough. Right.
There you go.
If it passes muster.
I'll send Harriet about it before. I'll tell you about it afterwards and see what your thoughts are. But it's, you
please
know.
Please send me something good, because I'm telling you, my eyes were, so many bottles of wine were drunk.
Damn.
This past week from, because, you know, I'm back to reading, you know, it's that time of year I start reading slush again. So it's just like, you know, when I go and read slush, for sci-fi, horror, and fantasy, I'm hoping to find, you know, I'm not the type of reader's like, I'm gonna get through as many as this crap. I'm looking for diamonds in a rough. Mm-hmm. So it hardens my heart when I have to go through so much stuff. And God bless you guys for sending stuff in. But it was rough. So whatever you got to give me, please. Jesus.
Be good.
Help me.
And I'm working on the thing I sent you, the rest of that, but we will talk about that offline.
How you guys doing with
the movie?
The movie. What's going on?
Well, second cut came in Thursday.
Okay.
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
But we have a notes call with the producers today.
Somebody better watch it. Luckily, it's short, right?
Yeah. And I got a and there's like an idea that I have that I can't even explain. So I have to kind of like do it on my own and then and show it to them.
Okay.
But just because there was like, you know, it's always that thing where you're kind of rushed in production and there's something that you...
You're talking about in the editing process that you want to do or what?
Well, yeah. There's like a surreal moment in it that we had wanted to do it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
We were conceiving it. And then because of like time issues and we were fighting the sun, we had to shoot something at Magic Hour. We didn't get it exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was spending the last time I saw cuts of it, like, how can we make this scene work? Because it's not working the way that I envisioned it. And I mean, we didn't just, it was like about lighting gags, this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of figured out a way, but it's like stock footage kind of stuff. And I'm going to find a way to.
So it's not like a color grading thing.
No, nothing at all. No, basically there's a new Kirsten Dunst movie coming out. I can't remember what it's called. Some A24 movie, some horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the trailer on it. And I was like, oh, there's my idea. There's my idea.
It's not the one that, Joe Edgerton directed, is it?
I think so.
The one, it comes at night or something like that?
Maybe, yeah. It's like
the one
I
want to see.
Yeah,
because,
maybe.
What's her name's in it? I think Carmen Ejogo goes in it.
Hmm.
Anything she's in, I'm going to go see.
I think so. Yeah, it's something he directed,
About it came at night or comes at night. I saw it,
no, that's what it's called.
Is in it?
I'm not sure if it's the same movie.
I didn't mean to make that face. Like,
but anyway.
Why she got to be in the movie?
I wasn't going to say anything.
You already got Carmen Ejogo. We don't need no other bitches in the movie. Stop yourself.
So we'll see. So there's that. My brother Alex and I just finished up.
Are you testing yesterday, right?
That was 2 days ago.
Okay.
We were testing this really, really dope anamorphic lens.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new zoom. It's like a 35-70 that this can be called PS Technique.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a compact zoom. We were testing it the other day. It looked dope.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really dope. I mean, you know, because he and I have been not arguing, but just lamenting that the new Blade Runner is shot on spherical glass, so it's not even going to really look like the original. And we're just like, what are they doing? Like, do they not know?
I saw the trailer, and I'm just like, it's like
messing up.
Wait. In the original, at least they have some people of color.
They did.
This future, no people of color, nowhere.
Nobody.
Hey. So there was a real. This is interesting about that. There's a really interesting guy I was reading about. Some video essay about Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. He was always talking about the off-world colonies and stuff like that. And he is pointing out that
black people and Mexican people left.
No. All the white people had left the planet, and the whites who were still down on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they had white flight, and those are the ones that got left behind.
Yeah.
Johnny May and them.
That's what it is. But yeah. Cause
so it's kind of like that one movie that Matt Damon did.
Yeah,
or whatever,
with Jodie Foster.
Yeah. It's like that's he's like an outside of Tyrell because he owns the company. There's no one white of means in that movie. and everyone else you see in the streets and everything like that. I was like, I never looked at it that way.
Huh. Okay.
You know, because it's interesting.
They can use that if they want to. But even if they all left, where's the rest of us?
Exactly. No, but I'm saying in the first movie, it's like that. Because there's so many people of color. Right. You see them all over the place. Right. You know, but in the second movie, no. No.
Interesting.
I'm very disappointed in that movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I'll go see it just for out of respect.
Mm-hmm.
I might not, because the last time I saw a movie like that, which was...
Prometheus?
Damn.
No,
because everybody hates Prometheus, and I say to myself,
yeah,
Prometheus
like
is not a bad movie.
I didn't like it.
It's just not an alien movie. It should have been a different. It should have been a different thing by itself. So if you go into it thinking it's not part of that, then it's actually a good movie.
That's right. That's a good point. No, I'm thinking of the fourth Indiana Jones movie, The Crystal Skull.
I'm not a fan of those.
See. After I saw that, I was kind of like, I don't even know if I can watch this franchise anymore.
with Shia LaBeouf and all that? I went to go see it just out of courtesy and childhood.
See, you can't do that anymore.
Horrible. I can't do it anymore.
See, I like Shia LaBeouf.
No. See, you can't watch movies out of courtesy.
No.
You can't watch movies
like James Dean.
No, he's not.
Just
how dare you?
Out there.
How dare you?
Because he never does it the same way.
Invoke James Dean.
Because James Dean was one of the first people to act.
Right now, James Dean is crawling up the steps right now as a zombie. Come pimp slap you right now. Shia LaBeouf is like James Dean.
I'm saying as far as
I'm
going to
move my seat over a little bit.
Fine, move over, bitch.
Please.
Move over, bacon.
Please.
There's something more media over here.
Anyway. So
what are we talking about today?
So, the reason why we're here today is because I've been like binge watching a lot of stuff and prepping for writing a bunch of articles on horror and film shit. Now that I got the summer off, months of just getting fat, happy, being at the beach, doing the fuck what I want to do, and then being in Europe and just being with family.
That's what you got to do.
So,
why do you get fat at the beach when you're at the beach? You're supposed to be at the beach trying
food.
To be trim.
You bring food and wine
and
beer.
That's when you're wearing nothing, so shouldn't you be like trying to get your body right at the beach?
No, that's why I'm losing weight now. Like, I'm dropping weight fast. Because in 2 months, I'll be at my normal weight, which is like 130. But because I haven't been home in a couple years, you know, that's when I get fit. And we eat a lot over there and we drink a lot over there. And for some reason, I get really thin. But when I get here, I eat the bad food and I get chubby, which is fine with me.
Master of None.
That's just
and
fine with you.
Yeah, I finished up Master of None, y'all.
Did you see that? That Italian food? I was like, this.
I was like, this mofo was around my peeps. And they not showing enough Italian food in this motherfucker. And he was only there for like 2 episodes and he came back to New York.
Oh, that's right. He went to Europe.
I saw 2 episodes, the first 2 episodes.
Okay. It's really good.
The first two is really good. I mean, I don't know how many people have seen The Bicycle Thief, but the first episode is a big homage to The Bicycle Thief.
Okay.
Black and white. There's a whole bunch of like homage shots to the movie. It's very hilarious if you know
and
the movie.
He's gotten with women of color in this season. Like a lot. Like they had to throw that in it because, you know, we was like, okay, now come on now, you can't be in New York and only dating white girls. You in New York, you in fucking New York, and you ain't dating everybody. What the fuck?
Hold on one second.
Anyway, so yeah, we were happy about that. He threw us a couple of bones, even though I was upset that the one sister in the first episode, spoiler alert, have you seen the rest of it?
I only saw the first 2 episodes,
so this is not really going to give away anything. We never see that chick again, and my hope is she would come back.
But she lives in New York. She's from New York.
One would think that he would look her up. But no, he does not. And he ends up pining away for the same one-dimensional girl. And it's kind of disappointing at the end. But I love it. Like, the Thanksgiving episode, if you haven't seen that episode yet. I Love New York episode.
I only saw the first two.
Well, dude, stop playing.
I watched them last night.
Look, get yourself some good food. Binge that thing. It's really good.
I was watching Goliath the last week, so I like Goliath.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I wasn't saying.
Have you seen it?
No.
Well, then you might want to see it.
I'm okay.
Damn.
You might want to see it. I mean, you don't have to.
This is why I like having Chris in, because Chris is like the type of dude, like some dudes, they'll say stuff and they just get really cowed. He don't back down. Mm-mm. And I like that. I respect that. So
I like my shit.
I like the pushback because
let people tell me it's not watchable.
The words, it was unwatchable, come up my mouth.
You were saying it. You were referencing it.
No, I did not. Anyway, so we're here today to talk about a topic that I'm really interested in. We've talked about this before, Hilliard, in terms of write for screenwriting, writing compelling and, you know, antagonists.
Sure.
But I want to talk about why is it that we love bad guys? Because here's my thing. When I go to movies, I don't know if it's just my psychology or I'm just attracted to the dark side or in my secret life I'm Darth Vader and if they gave me a choice.
Every movie that has a... Even the superhero movies, like I was thinking about Thor and you love the brother.
What's I'm
the
brother's seduced, name? Loki.
Loki, oh my God.
I'm always seduced by the. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Even when the show is supposed to be, the name of the show is the name of the good guy. And you, like for example, Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
You all right?
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah. Cottonmouth.
Is that jazz? Yeah.
But Cottonmouth.
Like the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you, the moment he walked out, or what's his name, the other character?
Diamondback?
The guy who plays his brother? Which one?
No, the...
Shades?
Shades. Oh,
yeah.
God. Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus. And it was like...
He's a really nice guy and a real person, too.
I'm telling you.
He's
but
always
it was like,
at Paris's house.
They kept pumping up in Luke Cage, like, yeah. And all the women were like, yeah, he... I'm like, look, I'm just one of them sisters, like... Yeah. Mm-hmm. People who like, like, look, I dig that. I love the dark skins.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But there's certain brothers that most sisters would think, oh, they're this, that, yeah. I just don't feel it. Like, I don't, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is totally different. Mm-hmm. So when I went in walking Luke Cage, a lot of sisters were like, yeah, we get the brother. And I was just like, eh, y'all got to give me some. All right, we're going to go for Misty Knight. So Misty, she's going to be my end to hook me in. But baby, let me tell you, when Cottonmouth showed up in that suit, I couldn't like. I was
dapper.
Literally. I was fast forward every time Luke showed up. He gonna fast forward.
Giving you
things.
Modern day Cotton Club and
just
shit.
Giving you just so much game. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just because he was. It was just something seductive about those characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the classic that I love, which everyone should watch at least 3 times a year, The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I love that movie is because of Michael Corleone, because he's seduced and he embraces his dark side. So what I want to talk about, why is that? Why is it that we are attracted to those type of characters? Those characters really pop.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you don't have a really strong antagonist or bad guy, how your shit's just going to flop.
Well, two things. One...
What's the psychology behind that, Chris?
The reason why your movie's going to flop if your bad guy sucks is because that's the main hurdle that your hero has to get over.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the screenwriting like paradigm... He or she doesn't change until they confront the bad guy.
Yeah.
And the bad guy
is the most important thing in your life.
And if the bad guy is not seemingly insurmountable, then the hero's journey is like, yeah, what the fuck?
Right.
I mean, serious.
Like, there is no hero's journey.
See, there's two, you just mentioned two things. And I think about this all the time. It's like about, like when I was growing up, like what movies meant something to me, and how now there'd be nothing that would really make me want to be a filmmaker. But you mentioned Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Darth Vader is such a bad fucking ass that you kind of watch that Star Wars and you're like, these motherfuckers aren't, the rebels ain't got no chance. They ain't got no chance.
Yeah,
and it goes back to what I was saying about Rogue One, right?
Mm-hmm.
The best part in Rogue One is when Vader shows up at the end and is whooping everyone's ass. Because you're like, damn,
right.
That's how hard he is. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, he was so, just what, like 2 minutes on screen? If that. But that, he's stabbing people and throwing you around, but that is just hinted at in episode 4. Mm-hmm. But you know, everyone knows he can do that.
Right.
All those people are like, oh shit, it's him.
Mm-hmm. You forget because he has superhuman powers that he could actually fight his ass.
And that's why, was it the Phantom Menace? What was the one with the dude with the red and black face?
Yeah, Phantom Menace, yeah.
That's why the Phantom Menace movie sucked. It sucked. Look, those of you who stands for that, I'm sorry, I have to tell y'all, it sucked. And I'm gonna tell you why it sucked. You almost had me, even with the bad casting. Because that movie had bad casting. Let's be real. they had made this guy seem like, okay, he better than Darth Vader. Like, his sword is like double-sided. Nigga got horns coming out his head. He's just like the baddest thing ever. when they had a fight scene finally and he was dead like that, I'm like, what is this shit?
Yeah.
What is, it only lasted, what, a couple of minutes? And then he was dead. And I was like, after that, you lost me. Like, mm-hmm. after that, I did not want to see any more of the Star Wars movies. Like, that tainted me.
Exactly.
For the rest of the series. And that is why I have a hard time when people are like, oh, you got to watch. No, you don't. Fuck those other ones.
No, just no, watch no, the no. First three. They just should have been Darth Maul. He should have been the antagonist, like, through all the whole trilogy, like, through all three mm-hmm. movies. It's like he wasn't, was just. It was a classic
he's a
mistake.
Guest star, right?
Yeah. A classic
now
mistake.
He's like a guest star.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, see, but again, you mentioned about the psychology of people, yes. stuff like that. Now, here's the thing, too. It goes back to another movie when we're kids, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. Raiders of the Lost Ark, there's a scene where Belloc is talking to Indy after Marion is supposedly killed, and he's in the bar and he's drinking, and he's like, you and me aren't that far apart. Mm-hmm. It won't take you like a push to push you out of the light. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what it is when the hero and the villain are so walking the same right. line, but the hero has to keep it in check and the villain doesn't. And that's also why we like villains, because villains, when they're done right, they're not keeping the shit in check that we all want to do in real life.
Let me ask you guys a question. I was thinking about this earlier. You know, when you go to see, let's just use the superheroes as an example. You go to see the last Boy Scout or whatever the fuck, right? You go to see somebody who's got power or who's strong, right? A strong cop or whatever the fuck, right? You wish you were them. Do you think that we're drawn to the villain because sometimes we wish they were them too?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
That's, you know, that's what I mean? Your shadow side speaking. Mm-hmm. That's that side of you. Like when you see movies and people, like there's certain people that'll go up and say things that you wish you could, they'll cuss people out.
Yeah, yeah.
And you wish you could
you
do
wish
that.
You wish you, that.
So
you wish you could do that.
You live vicariously.
Trump.
Yeah.
You love it. You love
live
it.
Vicariously do that. You, and well, that's so I'll be like, watch those
movies. And therefore, you got to write those people in a way that all the shit that you wish that you would do, could do and say to motherfuckers, you just write that. Like, for instance, I was watching Good, the Bad, the Ugly yesterday, just the opening scene. And,
just because, right?
Well,
damn cinephile.
Well, no, because we were talking.
People need to be.
Well, you need to be, but I'd watched War Machine, which no one should ever see. And there was a scene in there, and I was like, why did they do that Leone shit where it's like these long shots, and then someone's face comes in real, like, sharp in extreme close-up, and it's coming off the side, they go, to fuck up everyone's point of view. So I was showing Alex that, because we were talking about that lens test, and I remember fucking Levon Cleef, he comes to this guy's house.
God, Levon Cleef, remember that name?
Steps up into his crib, unasked, sits down at his table, starts eating the other guy's food. Doesn't even ask. He just I'm take your plate.
Damn, that's aggressive.
And eating it like mother.
It's like a prison movie.
Yeah, and he's sitting there telling him what's gonna happen. Uh-huh. And then when he's done, he kills him and shoots his son and his wife. And he's like, damn. See, that's how hard I am. That's how hard I am.
I'm gonna eat first.
I'm eat first. Talk to you.
Watch your family. Sweat it out, and then I'm gonna kill you. You know, it's. I don't know. It's like when I think a TV show. Like there's shows that are out. Like they have pretty good. They're like Billions.
Oh my god.
When
that's
you think
my
about
favorite
The Wire.
Show on TV right now.
When you think about, you know, just
have you seen Billions?
I just watched The Pilot the other day.
Dude, it's so smart.
Because you and Pamela were talking about it on my birthday,
smart.
And I was like,
oh my god. Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, you know, it's just those type of shows that have really good villains that can tell you when to watch that. And it's like trying to encourage writers, whether it's for TV or film, to try to write the strongest antagonist that you can, you know, because, you know, as we always say, the antagonist, of course, has their own story. They're the hero of their own story. But really, it's the bad guy that makes the movies.
Yeah.
Like, if there's no bad guys, there'd be no movie. I know we talk about the hero's journey. We talk about the inciting incident. Bitch, the bad guy makes the shit pop. And if it's not
Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Hans
the bad
Gruber.
Guy should be the reason you have an inciting incident.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Hans Gruber in Die Hard. Right. He's fucking hard as shit. Right. He got all these ideas.
Probably my favorite topic.
All this shit going on. Right. It's interesting you brought up, fuck, what did you just bring up?
Billions?
Some of you were watching Billions. Yeah, Billions. So, I've only watched the pilot. But, now you say to yourself, I'm saying to myself, dude, who's the bad guy?
Exactly.
Who's the bad guy in that? Because
they
is
both
it,
are villains.
See, because is it Axe?
And there's anti-heroes, yes. So there's people who
is it Axe? Because he's got money and he's doing well, but because we live in an age where we don't trust authority, maybe Paul Giamatti's a bad guy because he's letting that motherfucker. I mean, this it's just that's a really good way. You know, it's like
I'm telling you this. That's the good thing about TV, which is where film is, in my opinion, trying to go. Film used to be the shit. Now it's TV. TV has figured it out, right? That both of your antagonists and protagonists can be villains in the same time. They figured it out because that show, the more you get into it, they both are the antagonists the entire time. And every episode, one might be in charge of the other. You know, it's a cat and mouse thing the entire freaking, and I've seen everyone. It's the only show in the last 5 years that I've seen every episode besides The Walking Dead. Because it's so fucking brilliant.
Hey, really shout out to my friend Young who's writing for that show. Hey, we were in Film Independent together.
Oh, Into the Badlands. Yes. I'm all caught up on it, too.
Yeah,
I forgot.
And here's the thing with Into the Badlands, you know, which is like my pulp culture, one of my favorites, you know, because it's like, it's to me, it's crack fiction. It's like, it's got everything in the kitchen sink thrown into it.
Yeah.
And it's craziness, and who cares if the plot really makes sense, or what if going to upset people with fat in the kicking butt, and I love it. If you think about it, Sonny is a bad guy. He kills people.
Yeah.
He kills children and women folk.
Yeah. 400 and something, 30 times.
Yeah. But we root for him every week, you know, and it's like, you know, and if that was the real world, we would not be rooting for him. We'd be frightened of him and be like, girl, what you doing with this dude who killed a whole bunch of people and got all them tattoos on his back?
Oh, yeah.
But because it's so seductive and the clothes and the attitude that you're seduced, and we just forget that. All those tattoos of hundreds of people he has murdered on the behest of somebody else without thinking about it, without feeling anything for it, you know, it's a testament to how we will be seduced and like, well, okay, he kills people.
Well, yeah, I mean, look.
He dresses nice. And look. He's good to my mom.
We don't have...
Just take your shirt off.
Just take your shirt off.
Enough...
forget everything.
There's not enough outlets in society for us to really kind of... take our negativity
out. Video games.
Video, yeah, well, yeah, but no, well, yeah, but video games. But I think that's, what people. So that's why people put that in the entertainment. They make the villains so exciting.
Is that why MMA is probably the number one sport? You know, coming up now because people are using their frustration and their anxiety and whatever on punching bags and all that other stuff.
I mean, it's probably true. I mean, to me, I think a lot about. Particularly now, because there's so much of this Russia in the news. But I think about the whole post-war era up until the collapse of the Berlin Wall. It's like there was always a villain there in the culture to point at, to kind of like keep us in line.
Usually some outsider from outside the margins of our culture.
And since the collapse of that, I think we've been looking for a villain on some level, but we have to keep looking inside now.
Well, now we got the biggest villain. We got Trump now. So it's like, when in the history, like even when Bush was in power.
It wasn't that bad.
And the Bush, well, they were bad too.
I said it wasn't as bad.
They were bad with a smile on their face, you know, but it was
scary.
It's scary. That's to me could be even scary. At least with Trump, he's just letting you know, I'm an idiot. And we can see it. Like, yes.
See,
yes.
I think it's the exact same. You know, it's the quiet one and the loud one, and they're saying the exact same thing. You know what I mean? And to me, it's like, which one's more of a threat? The one who's confident because they grew up confident, or the one who's arrogant and confident, if that makes any sense?
It's going to be interesting in terms of the
full of entitlement, right? You know,
well, there's going to be this. It's going to be interesting what type of stories and movies and TV shows are coming out now under this 45 regime if we don't have no coup.
I think there might be a coup.
You think?
Or resignation, or assassination.
I just feel like he's got the most powerful lawyers in the world who know how to get out of everything.
Yeah, it's like...
But see, the thing is that he doesn't have... See, if he gets impeached, it's different... It's not the same... It's like a court-martial in a sense, where it's a different type of legal procedure. So these attorneys that you want to get, those people aren't versed on how to defend people... In that type of situation.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting. But
let's look at this. Keep your thought. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No. So that's all I was going to say. So I don't
know. Let's look at this. Let's play a game right quick.
Okay.
So if we were to do a movie about Trump, who's the antagonist in the story?
Trump.
Let's look at it like that.
You mean for Trump?
Yeah. Like if this was a story about
about
some young reporter or something trying to find a way
to be the media and the American people
to impeach him. Let's just say that's what the story is about.
So he's the protagonist. He's trying to stay alive. Who's after him?
Yeah. Let's say if he's the protagonist, who's the antagonist against him? That's intense.
That is intense. I would say that.
I would say the press. And activists and people who are constantly talking about him in social media and coming at him and all the people who are doing all the protests every week.
And see, I would almost make it a tragedy. In the sense
you're
where...
You're make me feel sorry for Trump.
Just hear me out.
You can try to write that movie if you want
to. Just hear me out.
All right.
Where, remember, everybody is a result of who they were as a kid. So
looks like the movie W.
Exactly. So who was his father, right? What was his relationship with his father that made him the person he is now, right? How has he become that person? So at some point, you either gain more sympathy or he learns that he was wrong all along. You see what I mean? He learned something about himself that he never was able to open himself up to because he put this shell on. Or like when you have a tragedy happen to yourself when you're a kid, like when you're molested or whatever, something devastating happens, you forget it. It's almost like something opens a window for him to see. That's what made me who I am today. I need to resign. Whatever, you know what I mean? Something tragic happens where he realizes himself. Right now the wall's up because he can't even see it. You know what I mean?
No, he can't.
He's so self-absorbed and such a narcissist. Mm-hmm. That will never happen. He will never have self-reflection. He will never have that epiphany moment.
I'm saying in a movie, though.
No, in the movie, it's going to be the other people around him that supported him. It has to be a character who was like, I don't know, maybe a Pence character or one of his aides that's going to realize this man's not going to change.
I quit, right?
And the only change is going to be that person. Like, I quit. I'm jumping over the fence. I'm leaving.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean
it's going to be Melania.
I just saw a tweet from Michelle Amour yesterday. I don't know if you saw it on Facebook.
No.
And she said it was a picture of Trump and his daughter, or Melania?
Ivanka.
Whatever. It was the picture of one of them getting off the plane and over there in Israel or Iran or whatever. Yeah. And
the big ass belt.
And she doesn't have on a. She's not covering her head.
Oh, she's not wearing the hijab.
When Trump had went off on Michelle, when she went over there and didn't wear it, talking about we were very disrespectful. Here's your wife walking around with that ugly ass belt, looking like a box. And his tie. Why was his tie so long?
Because people keep getting on how short it is.
Because he didn't tie it right.
But it's super long.
He was showing them. He was making a point.
It don't need to go down to your knees.
Don't people, comedians make jokes about how short his tie is.
But see, to me, the problem with Trump, this is the problem about Trump, right? With all the money he has, he still comes across as like a classless buffoon. Like he doesn't understand how to dress and groom himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, he comes from that kind of like lower middle class from his dad's root and the dad building himself up and becoming this multimillionaire where it's kind of like they don't have any type of name. They don't come from like the Mayflower. They don't have that pedigree. Nothing. They don't have that pedigree. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not old money. They like new money with, like you said, bad taste. I mean, anytime you got gold lamé and everything in your hotel and in your house.
You try so hard.
Like, what it tells me is you ain't got, you have no class.
Yep.
You know, to me, that's bad. And hey, forgive me for those people who like leopard print. That's like how people, when I see black folks with leopard print stuff,
oh
I'll be like,
God.
How gauche.
They're like, oh no, it's real
this
leopard.
Fashion faux pas. But you know what? But people love that. So I have to like back out. Like, you know what? People like what they like. But in my mind, I'm thinking, really? That, like, to me, that's the sign of life. So whenever I see gold or overly gold.
You have me thinking about this thing about Trump in the movie, because he reminds me of like Norma Desmond because he's so wrapped in his own head and he doesn't even understand where he's a problem or how he's and everything that occurred to me but that's kind of how he is. I'm just kind of thinking, what is that story?
The story would be Paul Ryan who has the epiphany and realizes, holy shit, everything I've been espousing is totally wrong. But now I'm stuck. I got to keep towing this thing until I figure out a way for me to get out of it. So as the house is burning down, he's trying to figure out his own exit. Because a lot of times I'll be looking, you ever look at these dudes in these pictures where I feel like they're sending us secret messages and codes. People be making fun, like the way they have their feet pointed in certain directions.
Yeah.
Like, a part of me is like, that shit might actually be real. Like, help me. Like,
help no. See, I'm going to tell you right now. I used to always tell people about... People always used to say these conspiracy type things you see in the movies
they're just
movie conspiracies. but what we've been living lets you know, and it's not just the thing with Trump. Like, just remember this time last year, those Panama Papers shit came out where they were hustling money all over the planet. I mean, it's like that shit. Like, writers don't make up shit that's so out of the norm. That's so like. Oh,
well, they have that saying, truth is always stranger than fiction.
Yeah, so, you know? I mean, someone's always pulling it together. Someone is always, they've seen something, they might twist a little bit or change the setting.
Sure, you have to still make it a movie. Yes,
you know, whatever it is, but you can't, but you're not making up that kind of wild shit. I think that shit exists. Shadow Cadmus and shit like that. I mean, this shit with your boy Trump and all his people.
Why is
and,
he my boy?
I mean, Joe Gazin, you know, shit.
My name in it.
I don't know.
I know, you know, it's one of those things that you know, as writers, when we're thinking about writing those things, you know, it's like not being afraid to delve into those type of characters. And like for me personally, I always feel that when you write a really strong, dark character, you know, it just makes your project so much better.
Well, I was just thinking about like one part of your pitch was, let's talk about, you know, also ways of making the antagonist compelling. And one of the things that was just sparking me was in all those examples of movies that you've shown, there's moments that made you like them. Almost Save the Cat moments, even for the
it's like
the villain.
Bad guy.
Oh, well, no, you know what I mean? Oh, exactly. Well, okay, so what was I watching recently that I loved is No Country for Old Men. Okay, so
I hated that movie.
Oh,
it was a slow move, but it was so.
But your boy, yeah. The
what's his name?
Javier Bardem.
Oh, that bad
that bad haircut. Everything like that.
That Prince Valiant gone wrong.
But see, you're talking about a scene. What's his Save the Cat scene?
So what was
scene?
The scene? Was
the Save the Cat. There's two scenes in there, but the first thing I remember, like, he gets arrested in the beginning in a car. You don't know anything about what is going on. He's in that police station, and the deputy is talking to his boss. Oh yeah, I caught this guy, and he's like, got these handcuffs on. He like comes, he you know, behind his back, and he pulls him around his front, and he like grabs that guy by the throat and like jumps back with him, and like chokes the guy out with the handcuffs on, and like breaks his larynx and shit like that. It's just like, this is a really brutal fucking scene. You're like, this motherfucker is hard as shit. And then he goes up. I think the next scene is he's
so what I'm hearing in that, if you don't mind me interrupting, keep that thought, is just like in your with your hero, you show what it is that their abilities. They showed you in that scene
what his abilities are.
You have to show us up front.
And it's a physical scene. Now there's a verbal scene that lets you know how really crazy he is. When he's talking to that old man at the gas station, and he's like, "Are you gonna bet your get a quarter the coin?" And he's really fucking with that guy, really putting that guy on the spot. And he's like, "Oh no, we gotta shut up. We gotta close now. We gotta." He goes, "No, you don't." He's so relentless. And I was like, "This guy is fucking with someone who's got nothing to do with the story at all."
Correct.
He's got nothing to do with the money. Yeah. He's got nothing to do with hiring. He's just someone who's inconveniencing him by talking to him. That's a really hard villain.
Right.
Because you don't even want to like cross their path in just across the street, cross their path. Like, hey, I see you. I got to dug into this building because he's so volatile.
Right.
And at the end of the movie, spoilers.
Oh, please. Them bitches should have been.
He comes and kills the girl, the wife. Yeah. Finds her like, you know, was a year or two late. I don't know how long it is, but he's like, you know what? I was told to kill you.
And I got a job to do.
And, you know, I got the money, and I killed your husband. Exactly. I'm still killing you.
Just because.
You know, what? And you got to respect
because I'm a pro.
Of principle.
Exactly. I'm like, professional.
Even though it sounds horrible, but that's the type of shit that makes you respect that bad guy.
Like, exactly.
He's got principle. It's been 2 years. He could have been living life, not even the.
His like, word is his bond,
his
right?
His word is his bond. Yes. And hey, that's just how it is. And that I will give you that for that part of that movie for that. But anything else in that movie? No. Well, it's just like when I was telling. Lionel Miller and, you know, his wife, Duane, like, why I love Kato on, you know, Underground. Because he's like the anti-hero, and he does things, and he says things that you wish black people could have said back then, and probably some of them did.
Mm-hmm. And you know they did.
And he's unapologetic.
That's why people were getting whipped, because they were doing shit they weren't supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And
they were talking back.
He was talking back.
They were doing all kinds of shit.
My job is to do this because I got it rough too, and I tried to tell y'all. And it's like that type of integrity, even though in the most horrific circumstances, and the fact that he's unapologetic about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what I'm doing. Even when they escape, he's like, if I got to go capture some of these other black people to save myself. And that's some hard shit, because the bleeding heart in yourself wants to think that, oh, in slavery, we were kumbaya, and we were going to try to get together.
Oh, no.
Folks was like, what do I need to survive? Just like Ernestine, you know, the Ernestine character, you know. I love her because she's doing some shit that I hate, but I understand why she's doing it, and she does it in a way where it's like, ah, shit, I'm going to, you're killing somebody else's mother to save your own kid, even though that, you know, that kind of thing. Or when she's setting the other girl, DeWanda's character, up, where basically you're going to be the new house girl, and this is how I'm going to show you how to do this. Where it's like you are grooming this girl to be raped, basically. Mm-hmm. Even though the girl's going willingly, like, okay, I'm going to go see what I can do to get this master to give me whatever. But under the laws of slavery, that's rape.
Yeah.
And you are grooming her and telling her, this is what you need to do. That's some other level shit where you're like.
But you know what? But her character, I know we're all off the side. But
no,
her
it's not, character. It's part of the topic.
Her character embraced, like, that from the pilot on, her relationship with the master, and when they have sex, she's in control. And I went, and I was thinking to myself, like, as I was watching that pilot the first time, I remember going, how did she reverse that sex? Is it because he's into her dominating him, or is it because she raised him as a kid?
I think and they were not, she wasn't that much.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out like what it was that turned that moment.
I think for me, you might have the subject.
So she's always in charge of him.
She's always
in
charge. It's like you said. It's that dominatrix. You know, that submissive. You know, the bottom and the top. Like in the real world, you know, she's the, you know, the bottom for
she's
him.
The top.
He's the top. But when they in that bedroom,
she's
those roles reverse, and he's into that. And
which
she
is, well, it's a similar thing like in Billions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean,
and that's why it's seductive, and that's why even though a part of you is thinking you should be doing that, you should be helping them and not trying to stop them, there's something about her just embrace, like, this is how shit is, and I'm going to work the system to how I can.
Well, see, it's interesting you say that about Underground, because about this sense of camaraderie and save the group and stuff like that. And I just think that and this is just a broader thing. I think at a certain level, people don't do that. I think people, I mean, that's what we would want. Like you said, we want to believe
that's
that.
That's why there's not that many heroes. Like, when we call somebody a hero, they have to do some hella stuff.
But it's one of those things where people, you know, they make that whole thing out in, you know, they say this a lot in these, like, war movies, where it's like, I'm not a hero. I just did what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it is, it's like, I think that we as people, we just do things that, When there's pressure on us, then we do things for us, and it's very, very hard to be selfless in that position. And that, I think, is what's interesting about when you're writing a villain, because he or she is doing things for them,
right?
And like you said earlier about they got to be this hero of their own story,
and in their world, they have their own shit, right?
You know,
yeah.
I think this is a really interesting. It's one of these John August things about, like, somebody called in and there's like 7 traits they had on like what makes a good villain, and one of those was, it's like they operate in a way that they know better,
right?
You know, it's kind of like what you're saying about, you know, in the Underground, because I only seen the pilot. They're doing things that they know. This is what I got to do, and since you guys don't know better, You gotta let me. You have to let me do what is gonna be good. At least for me.
Right.
It might hurt you, right. But that's because you don't know. It's interesting. It's one of the things. I mean, like, that's what makes storytelling really fascinating, is that you have to kind of make the people. The choices they make have to be real. Mm-hmm. And that's like the honesty in writing that everyone kind of like is harping on people about, is that like, and the honesty is that, is it reflective of what we might do
if
no one was looking,
right. Mm-hmm.
Or if there was no consequence? Cause honestly, with villains, they have done things where they haven't paid any consequences.
True.
And then it's just more and more steps of that. And then when you finally meet them, they haven't paid consequences on their actions in maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 years and shit. You know, now they're ready to. So it's
what did Al Capone last 30 years before he got caught?
And here's the thing: when you're writing your villains and your bad guys, you have to be very careful not to delve into the realm of caricature,
mm-hmm.
where it's like Snidely Whiplash, like, mm-hmm. because
what they call them,
Snidely Whiplash, with
mustache twirling.
You know, and there's been some movies where, and I'm trying to think of something that's like really blatant like that, where the bad guy is so comical that you don't take him serious anymore. Correct. And you don't really believe, okay, well, you already know they're going to overcome this, so let me focus in on something else, because clearly they're going to win at the end, you mm-hmm. know, because this bad guy is not really all that of a bad guy.
But see, to me, when people are writing like that, they haven't really analyzed the bad guy. Because in all the classic movies, like you said, Die Hard and, you know, all the other, even fucking, like you said, Darth Vader, they all have a motive, too. And they believe, just like the hero does, they're doing the right thing.
And there's a banality to their evil.
Then you want them to succeed too.
Right.
You know what I mean? You actually want them to destroy the world for whatever the fuck.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Because it makes sense to them.
Right.
And you want them to succeed, but your hero has a slightly better reason why it needs to not happen or whatever the fuck. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the hero, you know, like, was, who was I talking about? How, like, in the Marvel movies,
mm-hmm.
like the real only story of all the movies they've done, the first Iron Man.
I was just about to say Iron Man is nailed like, it in part one.
It's like
one.
The only yeah. one where the villain is a good rival. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, at every step of the way, Jeff Bridges is ahead mm-hmm. of Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you thought you were going to do this? Ha, I already did this.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Who the one who fucked up your money and your billions and got you voted out? Mm-hmm. That was me. Mm-hmm. And he does it at that moment where they're at that party where he can't really, he lets him know that at a point where he can't really, he can't confront him, you know? Mm-hmm. So he leaves him impotent. It's really mm-hmm. smart writing for that. And mm-hmm. I just feel like that's, and then the rest of them, the rest of the Marvel movies, I don't know if the, like, they don't feel like there's a threat. The villains don't feel threatening to me. Mm. I mean, particularly this the most forgettable film I've seen, maybe in just the Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Because I was like, who's the villain in this? What's this movie about? Like, what's going on? It's like there's no real pressure from anybody pushing you to do better.
Right.
And also what you want is like you wonder, is the villain gonna push the hero into the dark side, and is he gonna have to do dark stuff
mm-hmm.
to actually stay in the light? Like, right. how deep is he gonna have to go into his own personal hell, you know, to win, to survive? I mean, that's
I mean, that's why I always go back to The Godfather, because there's that moment in the film. It's like, to me, that's like the litmus of your, especially when you're dealing with an anti-hero type of quote bad guy,
yeah.
where, you know, basically the family's on the line. You know, he always wanted to walk that straight and narrow. And there's that moment he gets beat up. He's got the swollen jaw. And basically, he's got to sit in this restaurant and he's got to listen to this dude who shot his dad. And there's that moment where his eyes are just telling you, like, he's about to make that decision. Like, this is do or die.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
going to
go walk into
movie,
that bathroom. I'm going to get this gun and I'm just going to pop. And it's such a rich moment because it's where you realize that he is actively embracing.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally, he could just got up and say, oh, fuck it. You know, I can't do it. One of y'all do it. I'm still going to have my life, what have you. But there's that moment where he's sitting and the other dude's talking. Can I talk to an Italian? Italians always do that. When they're around regular folk,
their hands get to moving.
No, not only that, but they want to speak in their own language mm-hmm. because they really want to exclude you. They just want to get to the heart of it.
Sure,
like, we're going to talk as, you know, as people, mm-hmm. you know, because we're like, we're family. We're coming. don't be falling from that exactly, shit. Yeah, and yeah. Michael, and they call in, and Michael's just sitting there looking, and then he just stops, and he goes, can I go to the bathroom? And he gets up, and you're like, here we go. Mm. And then you want him to. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was a kid, when I first saw the drive-in, I was like, no, you're too cute. You don't want to be a bad guy. But years of watching that, to me, that's like the pivotal moment. That's like my favorite scene, like, gears up to that moment. It's like, go in there and get that gun and just shoot up everybody in that bitch.
Shoot that motherfucker in the face.
Shoot
that motherfucking Sterling Hayden in the face.
And you want him to. And it's like a beautiful moment in cinema when someone embraces that dark side where they actively decide, you know what? This is my new life now. This is what I'm going to do.
Well, see, but as you said, you actually embrace your dark side because...
But he's still wonderful. He has his family.
He's still great, but it's but again...
Kills people on the side every now and then. Goes home, eats pasta.
Kills his brother. Yeah, dude, he's going to do. He's going to do.
At least he waited till mom passed away. He had that respect.
Yes.
Told him, you can't come to the house. And when you do come visit, I have to be gone.
Yes.
The moment mama was up in that casket.
You're gone, Fredo. You're gone.
I'm going to make you comfortable. In fact, I'm going to wait a couple of months when mama's gone. And go fishing. Oh, go take the nephew. Hey, oh. And then pop, done.
Done. No, but the thing is to say.
It's beautiful.
Is that it's interesting because we have moments in our life where we decide to do. Decide to harm someone, mm-hmm. and we kind of struggle with that. You have to struggle with it.
And harm can be something simple like breaking up with somebody or telling people you can't come.
No, but what I'm saying is, if someone like really harms you, and you're like, do I need to get some revenge on these people somehow?
Right.
You know, and a lot of times that happens that's actually like a workplace thing more than anything. Mm-hmm. Where someone fucks you with the job and you're like, how do I get them back? How do I fuck them? And it's like, that's that moment that you usually don't do anything. Usually like, well, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to work harder and figure out what to do to not let that happen again. Mm-hmm. But see, in the movie, the person's like... You know, I'm going to cut this motherfucker's brake lines on his tires because he wronged me.
That's why...
He wronged me.
And to this day, I'm still mad that Jake Gyllenhaal never won. That's why I really like Nightcrawler. Because mm-hmm. in Nightcrawler, Jake Gyllenhaal, he is the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
He's your protagonist, and he's the bad guy.
Interesting. And yeah, two for one.
Yeah. And he is his own worst... You know, he sets up his own complications. But as the movie progresses, you realize he's the bad guy. And he... doesn't care. Like, I have a goal.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some things I need to work through. And either you're with me or you're not. You know? And there's that pivotal scene where he's talking to...
he's almost like the young version of the guy in No Country for Old
Men. Yeah, he's like...
yeah.
But it's the banality of it. It's like, it's not to that extreme, mm-hmm. but you could see where it could go that way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Really, really, really... Totally. It can go that way. Right. So, you know, it's like, it's... Like you said, for writers, write that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I love the scene in that movie, Nightcrawler,
coming up
when he kind of like tells Rene Russo, mm-hmm. you have to have sex with me.
Yeah, basically,
you have to.
I mean, like he basically. Mentally rapes her.
And I expect you to be a certain time, and we're having dinner.
Yeah.
And I expect to see you this evening.
And we're going
to
do it this way.
And she looks at him like, are you saying this?
Are you for real?
Yeah, and he is. And it's a beautiful moment in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, holy shit. Like, this, that was some beautiful writing, and I'm upset that he didn't win.
Oh, that's
He got robbed.
Oh, good.
He got robbed, and I mean, I think the whole movie got robbed on every level, nothing. Yeah. Like
Riz Ahmed should have been nominated.
You predicted that, like, way earlier. You saw it opening weekend, didn't you?
Listen, wrote about it
mm-hmm.
in Bitch Flicks,
mm-hmm.
told y'all Rene Russo should have been nominated, Riz Ahmed should have been nominated, mm-hmm. just for that fragile character that he played.
Yeah.
Like, what other best supporting actor was on that level?
Yeah.
You know what, y'all gonna make me mad and look up, see who it is, and go to that person's house and go take that award back and give it to Riz. But, you know, it was like one of those things where it was in a long time where the bad guy is mm-hmm. the lead, and you're kind of wanting him to mm-hmm. succeed. Like, maybe you are gonna cut those brake lines off, mm-hmm. old boy. And... home dude is dead, your mm-hmm. rival, and go ahead and take a videotape of him and sell it to his rival. I mean, it's so hardcore.
Yeah.
And it's like...
He's so ruthless.
He is. He's so ruthless. He just does that. And there's something in human nature that revels. I don't know if it's not... What is it? Schadenfreude? Whatever, like, somebody's misery where you just like...
Yeah, Schadenfreude. Yeah.
You just enjoy sometimes that falling, especially if it's a really good bad guy that gives it to you. you know. So if you're writing those bad guys, give us
exactly.
Make it work for us. I mean, you know, I mean, the classic one also was like, not classic, but most recent, I think, is Breaking Bad, Walter White. Like, we just love the fact that he's doing everything. It's, you know, and I was watching that in Sons of Anarchy a lot at the same time, and they both kind of use the similar kind of motivation to do anything it's for the family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly,
if you watch it enough, you could convince yourself that, yeah, what we're doing is for the family.
Michael Corleone, same thing. It's like people will do a lot of really wild ass shit. Because they got to save their family.
Yeah,
because
they want to eat.
But at the same time, I think what's really is that they don't want the family to know what they did.
It's a secret.
Because the family, like Skyler, was like, motherfucker, you're crazy.
I mean, Tony Soprano, he didn't tell his wife everything.
No, he couldn't. You know what I mean? He can't. Exactly. You can't do that shit because it's like. Because
I remember there was an episode where the kids discovered that he was a mob dude or some shit. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's like Goodfellas, you know?
Exactly. Let's wrap it up.
Those kind of characters that we like. Why we like Joe Pesci. Why, even though he's like insane.
He was brilliant in that role.
We love him. Funny Hot, that whole scene, Funny Hot, and you're like, dude, all right, calm down. And then when he shoots him, your first inkling is, oh my God, I should hate this guy. But no, you're compelled to keep watching him. Like, what's he going to do next? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the extreme? When he goes after what's his name and says, oh, go fuck yourself. Oh, go fuck myself, blah, blah, blah.
You could have watched a whole movie just on his character.
Yes.
Which they should have did a spinoff on
his ass. They really should have.
Anyway. No, they should. I'm just saying. It's just, it's interesting to have seen that. I just don't know. I mean,
but I'll leave everybody with this. Just make sure when you set up your hero, you set them up and you show what great ability they have, and you do the same thing with your hero.
You mean the bad guy?
Yeah, with the bad guy. I'm sorry, with the hero, you set them up in a great way, and then when you meet your bad guy, you also set them up in a way, like you said. Either they walk in your house and they sit down in front of you.
Gotta feel like insurmountable odds.
And they eat from your fucking plate.
Yes.
Or they do what they did in Sexy Beast.
Yes.
You know, where people tell you that they're coming, and by the time you meet them, you're already scared to death.
They're already scared.
You know what I mean? But make sure that what ability you give your hero is the ability that he didn't even realize is that is the thing that helps him take down the antagonist.
Right.
And usually, they didn't realize he had the force.
Right.
You feel me?
Right.
You mentioned, like, usually they're both the, you know, two different sides of the same coin. Correct. They both have that thing in them. Mm-hmm. They're just choosing different paths to get what they need.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got to be equal push. If it's just that, don't give us a Darth Maul.
No.
Ever.
Talking all that stuff, and then you're done in like 2 seconds. Don't give us the stuff that they had in a bunch of movies that have come out where we don't care.
You know, like no villain. I mean, see, the thing is that I can't even think of a villain that I've seen in a movie or any, like, late. That I can't even think of a villain that's been impressive. I mean, maybe Christopher Waltz in Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe about it. But that's because he is like the villain in Iron Man, where he's always a step ahead of everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? And the villain should be ahead. Because
when you plot out your story and you look at the set pieces, you should be setting them around your antagonist, in my opinion, and then let your hero figure them out.
Yeah.
You know, eventually. Yeah. That I would work backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, where you at, Lisa? Lisa Cult Jam.
I'm always on Twitter.
You on there now.
excited. And find me on BitchFlix. Shout out to Valerie Complex, because there was an article that went out because the Wonder Woman, there was a male critic who had made the comment like, oh, you know, I've been planning all year to diss and pan the Wonder Woman movie, but it's actually pretty good, because they lifted the embargo for people to go see it and start talking about it a little bit. And it's been getting, so far, I've been hearing really good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this big thing on Twitter where we were talking about, see, this is why you need more women doing film criticism and doing film reviews, because you have guys who are sitting here saying stuff publicly, unapologetically, like, oh, I was planning on panning it anyway, but I guess because it's good now, I guess I can't say it's bad. It's like, really? So they kind of like gave a shout out to a lot of people, female film critics, and Valerie put a bunch of list of women, especially women of color. So shout out
to
her.
You know what's funny? And I don't know, I'm trying to end this episode, but I mean, what do they think? They're going to do Wonder Woman 1977 again or something? What the fuck? Like, it's just going to be his campy little. They didn't do that with Batman. All the movies are darker now with character, and you know what I mean?
I think
to be.
I think a part of that whole schism with Wonder Woman was because when they remember when they had the whole the TV show version of it and they had the pilot and it never went anywhere.
Yeah.
And people were kind of making fun of it then, like, oh, the costume and all that. And I think there's like that. They've got
But it's like I've been saying, she was the best thing in Batman vs Superman.
She was the only thing I went to go see.
Every moment when she was in the, when she was on screen, whether in costume or without, the energy of the movie changed.
Yes.
And I was like,
Carter?
Yeah. The original,
Oh, that was her real name.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
Diana. That was
Diana Prince.
Diana Prince. And I just feel like that's why I want to see the movie. That's why I'm curious to see the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go opening weekend.
Just please go. Sure. Just a second.
Yeah.
Go. And even if you can't go, buy a ticket.
And there's finally ads now. There's finally ads and marketing I'm sort of seeing now.
Oh,
but
finally.
Because Linnell was
Yeah, but it's like, but I'm saying to myself, it's like that the character is just, you can, that, the fact that you're saying that these male critics think is going to be bad ahead of time, I just feel like that's just, it's just fucked because you don't know what that movie can do. And honestly, your expectations on the movie should be really low just because all the movies coming out of DC are not that strong anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if it just exceeds your expectations, it'll be a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can it be a great movie?
True.
Yeah.
We don't know until we see it.
Right.
You know,
so go see it. June 2nd is when it opens. Exactly. Go the opening weekend. Support it. Support. Go dress up. If you have little girls, go get your little costumes and go and support Diana Prince and Patty Jenkins and everybody else who's involved in making the movie. I hope it does well.
I hope it does well, too. But who's the villain? Who's the villain in it? We don't know yet.
That, we don't know yet. So
that's great. See, that's great.
That's even, yeah. There's Ares, the one military, but we'll see.
So where am I? I am at, I'm on Twitter at unauthorized CBD, and I'm trying to write some more stuff on my site on shadowboxercinema.net, but I just have to finish up about 4 or 5 articles. And then I was going to write something about Ghost in the Shell, but I don't think that's necessary.
And I'm your boy, Hilliard Guest. And you guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. What else? Oh, follow us on Facebook. That's starting to grow. That's going good. Somebody's going to put some of their Bitflix things on there one day. And
I'm hardly ever on Facebook.
Just pull your old shit on there.
Oh, I keep telling myself. All right, I will. I've been saying that for the last 2 years, though.
Anyway, so that's what's up. Y'all know what to do. Join in with me.
You got, why are your hands out like you about to quiet your <director. laughs>
do it. They put me on the cross. Exactly. Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what?
2017.
Where I get 16 from?
You know what? I'm about to slap you.
5 months in.
2017, y'all.
All right.
Peace, y'all.
Peace.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.